Imagine a world where Jesus never died and Hitler never lived. Where justice is not only possible, but inevitable, unstoppable, infallible. Where the government's prime directive is to give out free lollipops to everyone. Where little black children and little white children build sandcastles together on a beach of infinite peace under the majestic ethereal arc of an eternal rainbow of unending love. Where Jeremy Kyle is both unwanted and unwatched. This is a world that bears witness to the all-new Sound Advice podcast. And on the 100th billionth day, I looked at it and proclaimed that it was good. Joe agrees. Welcome to the very first Sound Advice UK podcast, being broadcast from the Castile O'Hare International Studios here in London, with myself, Elliot Rushbrook.
And me, Simon Lawrence.
We'll be here for about half an hour.
Who are we interviewing?
First up, we're going to have an interview with the Sound Advice UK team, just to give everyone a sense out there on the interweb of what we're about, what we do, how we do it.
Yep.
After which, we're going to have an interview with John Tirado over the phone, who's got a new album coming out.
So we're going to be doing an interview with Joe Polton from Third Rock, great band, and he's going to be talking about the low points of being a musician. We've got John Murray, a band manager.
He is the manager of Ictus, who's a band with Sound Advice, who we've been helping out doing videos for and stuff, and he'll be just telling us about the pitfalls of managing, what's involved, and how you can get into it if you'd like to.
Yeah.
Who else we got?
We've got Fran Adamsman coming up.
Renowned beat poet.
Yeah, she is the queen of beat poetry. Nonetheless. No, she really is.
I quite like the idea of a monarchy of beat poetry.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Kerouac or something, you know. He was a, not beat poet, a beat writer, wasn't he?
He's very much the Jesus of beat poetry.
Yeah, it's great. So the Queen and the Jesus.
The Queen and the Jesus,
yeah,
right.
In fact, Kerouac did make a pass at her once, apparently. She started way back in about 1958, I believe. So we're really excited to have her on the show.
I understand you work quite closely with her.
Yeah, we've got a new album coming out and a lot of her lyrics are on the album.
To get a better sense of what Sound Advice actually is about, we have got an interview with the Sound Advice team, which is coming up now. Okay, well, we are in the kitchen of the Sound Advice International Studios doing an interview with the Sound Advice UK team. What was the point of Sound Advice? Why did you come up with it?
We were filming John Tirado, not before Sound Advice, it's before Sound Advice, like before the Ice Age, you know, the world was very different. And peace reigned and the sun always shone. And he has a band called Anash. And we've been filming them. And we've been filming, because we were staying there anyway, we were filming the whole story of them. And that is not, the end result of that is actually on the site, on the Sound Advice website.
This is Ollie talking about this.
Yes. Basically, Sound Advice is something that a team of us all came up with from different walks of life. And it's just music and media coming together to create an online and offline portal where anyone who likes listening to music, plays music, is involved in music in any way, can go for advice, help on things, to discover new music, to meet new people involved in music. You know, just anything that you want to do with music is there.
Cool. Well, that covers, you know, what you can expect of Sound Advice as a member and why, you know, why you decided to it. What does Sound Advice actually do?
The website, it promotes fans, it promotes bands' events. Has a directory of venues and Sound Advice clips, really, which is basically videos about anything relating to music.
Sure, and you didn't, and there was nothing like this around before. But...
No, well, we had a look online, and there was a lot of information, but firstly, it
very
was
sporadic.
Very scattered.
Very scattered.
Also, very written. It wasn't very visual. Whereas, because a lot of us come from a film background. It's all very video-based, which today is kind of vital, and also a lot easier to learn from.
And you had to get it from lots of different places, and we're hoping that Sound Advice is the one place you go to for everything.
So you came up with the idea about, what's it, 3-4 years ago, something like that, the initial stages. I mean, obviously since then, things like YouTube, Google Video, and MySpace have taken off. What does it actually provide that those things don't?
Well, I would say one of the main things is that MySpace and YouTube are very wide. They cover a huge spectrum. So if you're looking for something very specific, it's actually pretty hard to find. Whereas Sound Advice is kind of like taking those concepts and minimising them. I'd say another very big aspect of it is that we run very strangely as a business in that it's not just about the end product. It's also about how the whole business is run as a whole.
What I feel is a coming together of video, media, and music, and I think it's an amazing kind of symbiotic relationship. Do you know what I mean? And we find that that musicians are amazed by the fact that they're getting something for free for once. And this came from the time when we talked to John. You know, basically, we realised how hard musicians work to earn a very small crust.
Which is madness as well, considering, you know, how much revenue there is to be made from creativity and how much emphasis, you know, how much time is devoted and business is devoted to it.
It's supposed to be this country's most important product, creativity. And what the hell do the people at the bottom get to help them ever make it?
Sure.
You know, through the network. And to me, one of the most significant things that's happened since Sound Advice concept began was me saying to Ollie at one point, I was thinking with my head and my age, I was thinking, we're going to get to a point. We've got so many people working for us. We've got such a, you know, such a scale. We need a management hierarchy. So I said to Ollie, exactly that. What are we going to do about management hierarchy? And she said, with the wisdom of her years, you know, and also, to some extent, forgive me for this, the naivety, you know, she hasn't been indoctrinated by the system. Mm. And she said, what's wrong with the Wednesdays? The Wednesday meals, you know, when three or four random people, as we are now, sit around and we basically make decisions on the basis of what we think. If, you know, we might refer it to other people as well, but a lot of decision-making is made in this forum, in this way. And that is how Ollie was suggesting we maintain it forever, however big we get. And I, when I heard her say that, I thought, wow, that is a big think, but that's absolutely right. And I'm now convinced that this is the way to do it.
I think this is like part of why Sound Advice is how it is and why people do work for free. You know, everyone sitting around this table is doing this for free. Everyone that does anything for us does it for nothing. The reason it works and the reason that people are willing to do that is because it is more than just a job. It's something that people do because they love it and because they feel at home here. And I think that's what's kind of amazing about it, is that because we work in this fashion, anyone, even if you're nothing to do with the creative arts, anyone that walks through this door and has an idea, we will listen to and will hold the same weight as another person's idea.
Yeah, and this is something we can do. We're creatives in the video and film and related design, website, media, and we are basically saying, look, let's all help to further something, which is, you know, great for everybody. It helps us all.
Sound Advice is, okay, today there's only three of us here, but Sound Advice is an excessively wide group of people from everywhere, and I think, you know, that's what is also important, because you've got everyone's different ideas.
So how could someone listening to this, who does have, you know, creative ideas or is interested in the music industry in any sense, how can they actually get involved with Sound Advice?
Just go up to your favourite band or a musician, you know, say, you know, I, if I can get a camera, can I film you? Or if you're a band, say to someone you know who's got a camera, who can use it, or borrow one.
To go to the site and find out how to do it.
And it's all on the site.
Yeah.
And
I think also, if you're a musician and you want to
promote yourself,
go on and make yourself a band profile. Or if you want to help other musicians, if you have a skill in something, record that skill, tell people how you're doing it, and put it onto the Sound Advice section. Yeah. If you have ideas about Sound Advice and you want to get involved in the back end of it, so obviously the bit that we're all doing, that's
the management,
like a slight dirty section of the window, but whatever.
Send us an email.
Then send us an email. Go to the forum, send us an email, ring us up, and guaranteed we will take your ideas on board. And if you live in North London, we'll be more than happy to meet up with you and see what you want to do.
So that was the Sound Advice team. If you want to find out more, you can go to the website, which is
www.soundadviceuk.com.
Yes, and we'd love you to get involved. If you're in the media or music or anything, that'd be fantastic. Come and get involved.
Also, go on the forum at soundadvice.com. Mm-hmm. We need rhyming couplets for a project we've got coming up. We'll tell you a bit about that later. For now, John Tirado on the phone from sunny Spain. And this is John Tirado, who is a singer-songwriter in his own right, but also helped come up with the whole idea, the whole concept of Sound Advice.
Yeah, we had a bit of an epiphany on a little coach ride out to the beach.
Okay, and how did this sort of epiphany, this moment, come about?
We were going around filming myself playing shows around, and you know, they had talked about some ideas of, you know, trying to help bands out. We sort of like had this long conversation, because we went to this particular beach, which is about an hour away from the house. So on that hour ride, we were just all excited about all these different ideas, and we came up with the idea. Like, you know, questions and ideas that felt that we needed, like, should be shared between other musicians. You know, lots of bands having problems with the music being downloaded, and record labels changing their whole attitude towards you know, musicians and stuff because of the market and all these things. And we're just, you know, sort of chatting about, you know, what are the people that don't, you know, have all the breaks to get what they want done need? And, you know, we realized that with so many questions that at some point, who do you turn to ask these questions? You know, we just said, well, who better to ask than the musicians themselves?
It was like a grassroots thing then.
Oh, yeah, no, it was definitely grassroots. We were just putting seeds in the dirt, really.
But so where did you actually see it going then? I mean, I'm sure you weren't expecting ever a Sound Advice internet radio show like what we're doing right now.
No, I didn't expect that. I mean, you're not supposed to expect where it's going. You just go, and you see where it takes you. I mean, that's the idea of, you know, doing this sort of project. It's like every new interview, every new idea that somebody puts into the concept of Sound Advice is what makes it where it's going.
And for you personally, as a musician, how did you feel it was going to help you?
Well, in the beginning, just a bit of exposure as well, because working with Ollie and Dominic, we were doing, you know, filming my shows, and then it's getting put up somewhere for people to see. And also, in a sense, I think that it was just also from my, I don't know, my idea of helping something else besides just being a musician. You know,
yeah.
That sort of, for me, was like that as well. The goal was to sort of, you know, generally connect people in the industry and have them, you know, be able to communicate on a level where they don't feel they're, you know, they're out of reach. And also, you know, and then at that point from there, it moves in any direction that it goes. Sound Advice could be something that you go out, you know, they come and record your band and they ask some questions. So you're there on there for other musicians and other people to experience about what you not just hear a track from your demo or see you play on YouTube. They can actually communicate with you. You can hear you talking about how you go about what you do.
If there's some musicians listening now, what would be some key advice that you would give them? Perhaps they're literally just starting. What would your advice be?
I would say definitely wipe your eyes of anything that you think you see on MTV or any of this other stuff. I would say because it's really not like that out there. I would say practice your skill, work on your songwriting, really try to go out there and be personal and meet people and make as many contacts as you possibly can, because that's ultimately gonna be what brings you to where you're going to go with your career, with your music, or in whatever it may be. You have to really be out there doing it, because
not just trying to get on Cribs.
No, not just that.
Cool,
well,
that's
part of it, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you are a musician. You've got a new album coming out as well, Slow Motion Party, I believe it's called. Is that released yet?
It's going to come out, I think, in about 2 or 3 months, probably the end of the summer.
Cool. You've got a MySpace as well.
I do, yes.
Which is www.myspace.com/JohnTorrado.
Yeah, that's John Torrado. Just John Torrado.
And so obviously all the album information will be available there and stuff you've got coming up.
I would say about maybe 6 months after I have the album out in England. Because when I catch you, I know what to do. But all I want to know is if you want to. Jody, why do you dance away? It seems you've seen a ghost around my face.
Cool, that sounds pretty good. Well, what's your YouTube channel called, just for people who want to check it out?
Oh, I don't know, but if you go on to YouTube...
This is why you need Sound Advice, because you can't remember
exactly.
Your own stuff.
Well, I said that. I said this is why... I said YouTube, MySpace, Sound Advice.
You actually tried to come to London recently. You had a bit of a problem.
Yeah, I had a bit of a problem with the immigration coming through the airport, and that was not fun at all, I'll say that. If I was ever looking for street credibility, I just got over there in the jail at Gatwick Airport. Now I'm like a rap star.
What was the problem?
Well, what actually happened was I had booked some shows and around Brighton. And what happened was basically when I came through the airport, they started asking me a lot of questions. And they asked me, one of the questions was that would I had my luggage.
That was John Torrado on the phone all the way from sunny Spain. You can find out more about John Torrado at his blog at myspace.com/JohnTorrado. That's Torrado, T-I-R-A-D-O.
Yes, and you had a little bit of his Spanish story, and we're going to serialise that.
The Saga of the Spanish Suicide Busker. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's
that's got a good title.
Thank you. We've got no idea how many parts it's going to be in.
It's going to be worth tuning in for that way. It's a great story.
It is fantastic. And also, coming up next, we've got Joe Poulton, who's going to be discussing the highs and lows of being in the music industry in the world as it is today.
Yes.
You there are Joe Poulton.
That's right.
You took part in the first ever, was it the first ever Sound Advice video interview?
The first ever Sound Advice music promo.
Music promo, okay, cool. So first Sound Advice promo, that was you.
Right, well, the first Sound Advice promo we did was it was a few years back, and they came down to a gig in the Pleasure Unit in Bethnal Green, and they interviewed me about, you know, what my musical stance was, you know, about the band, and they videoed us live as well. About a few months later, it was basically edited and then put up onto the internet, and you can see it at the Sound Advice website.
I mean, at the time, did you have any promotion of your own going on at all?
Generally, we had like a MySpace, which is myspace.com/graphite records. You can look at Third Rock, which is 3RDROK at YouTube, to see some of the videos that we've been working on. And we were doing gigs in and around the London area. You know, I think it's very beneficial to bands to get the experience of being interviewed and cutting it up with a live performance, just to see, you know, what an overall finished product of a band is. It also shows a lot more about where they come from and what they look like and how they would be interviewed. And there's such a glut of music and MP3s that are basically scattered around. And I don't think the music business can really decide what's good and what isn't. So they generally just seem to go with what they know.
So you do think then that that band image is integral to the actual music itself?
I think definitely as far as the fans are concerned. And I think that's what matters if you want to make your band a success. Most of the stuff out there is absolute rubbish. And, you know, I can't understand why lots of fans will go, oh, well, that's so amazing. You know, she's just talking about herself, or they're just talking about themselves and their problems. I mean, who cares? Why do you care about this other person so much when you can actually do it yourself?
I mean, your music's, there's a lot of blues influence. I mean, but it's also hip hop as well, which is...
Well, it's got rapping in it, I suppose.
Well, it's got, yeah. I mean, there's one song, Nerdy DJ.
Nerdy DJ, yeah.
Which is basically right. rapping over blues, really.
Over a 12-bar blues riff. And that, you know, recently a reporter who works for Rock and Reel was saying it's kind of a protest song against, you know, people using DJ as a fashion accessory.
Well, fair enough, but what kind of bar problems are your band having then?
Well, to getting a fan base is really difficult. I mean, the first thing you've got to do, you've got to have friends that are always going to go to the gigs. And then there's only so far your friends can turn up to a gig, particularly in London, is if you don't have lots of people turning up, then they automatically assume, well, nobody likes them, so they're no good. But maybe we're just not any good. But you can decide for yourself if you're listening to this podcast.
Now, Rudy weren't a gangster, stopped his bar, living off his parents with money to flaw. Credit cards are fun, no bouncy checks. What better way to waste the cash than on debts? One litre turntables and a stack of tunes. Every record shop's got debts to lose. He practiced every night on the ones and twos, wishing one day that he would make the news.
Okay, well, that was Third Rock with Nerdy DJ. But just a minute ago, you're talking about your problems. Well, problems that your band are having.
Just generally getting people along for gigs, you know, getting good gigs. And I believe that's probably down to the fan base and, you know, not raising enough of a profile.
What can you do about that? Or what are you doing?
Well,
about that?
You know, maybe running promotions, for example. You can. It's very easy these days, once you've got a recording, to turn it into, you know, cheap CDs, you know, get a cover for it, you know, give them out at gigs and, you know, get a mailing list together.
Well, you can self-promote quite
easily. Yeah, self-promote. I also think having your own website is kind of key, I think.
How have you been self-promoting?
We are going to be giving out CDs at gigs. And getting, hopefully, building up a good mailing list and, you know, getting some loyal fans that are actually interested in the brand and interested in the music.
We'd just like to emphasise that point. So you will actually be giving things away.
Giving cheap CDs.
Well, we're talking about music videos earlier and how important they were. You direct, produce, but you do all the videos yourself.
Well, before I came to Sound Advice and asked them for the help, I'd never done editing. I always had lots of ideas to make videos. And the key was actually learning how to edit it. Because really, you can have the idea and, you know, buy yourself a small camera and go out and shoot. The only thing you really need to do is to make sure that it can all be synced up to the song, which is not very difficult these days.
Once you've got that technical knowledge of how to, you know, how to go and make videos and stuff, how much has that allowed you to expand what you actually do?
I think, you know, the MP4 is the new MP3. And everybody should really be making videos, because if you can't make a video, then, you know, no one's going to ever really take you seriously. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, even if it's something from...
I'm having that problem as well.
It's like you kind of get right, you get kind of head block.
Is it the business aspect of it, of the music industry that's getting you down? Is it the actual business of it?
Yeah, I suppose so. It's just like, you know, it's not just doing it so you can be famous and make loads of money. It's kind of just doing it, I suppose, for the love of it. But then if no one really pays any attention to you doing it, then why are you doing it? Especially in music, is anything genius unless anybody actually else likes it? Because you can think that you're genius. I can write a song and think, oh, that's genius. But then if no one else ever likes it and no one else ever listens to it, then is it actually genius, or is it just genius in your own head?
All right.
So that was Joe Poulton. I'm just going to... Are you right there? Someone's going to go off and slash my wrists. Oh, <okay. laughs> It wasn't that bad.
That can't be the best thing we can say.
No. But, so, take two.
Take two.
But no, it's interesting to hear that side of the music industry, especially when everyone's
the other
so
side, the yeah, dark side. Yeah.
That whole MTV generation, everyone's so upbeat, aren't they, all the time? Everything's happy and brilliant. So, you know, it's kind of, I think it's good to hear that. So thanks, Joe, for that.
For the pathos. But up next, we've got John Murray. He's going to be extolling the virtues of band management as a skill, as a practice, as an art form, as a lifestyle choice.
And why you need it if you're a musician.
We've got John Murray on the phone. He's a manager.
Of whom? Ictus, I believe it is. Ictus, you're managing Ictus at the moment, yeah, John?
Yeah, certainly am.
If you had to write yourself out a job description, what would you actually say that you do?
Right, I'm a little fat old man with a bald head. Right, this is what it is. I was asked to help them when they was younger.
Yeah.
Because they were going nowhere. Basically, they couldn't arrange gigs and things themselves. I was asked to help them, and I said, what can I do? I don't know nothing about music. I knocked on doors. I'm within 3 weeks, we've got the Abbey Park Music Festival, got Leicester Sound, then we met Neville Staples. He says he's my son's dad.
Obviously, there's loads of, you know, new technology around and stuff. There's ways that people can promote themselves, you know. But, I mean, what is it that, you know, having a manager provides that kind of stuff can't do?
Basically, the manager will obviously buy a website, a domain name, which is expand.com. And then we've got the MySpace. If you've got the MySpace site, people get to hear your music all over the world. The music is selling. Plus, we own everything ourselves.
A lot of musicians these days who don't have a manager go about getting gigs through MySpace. In which way do you think a manager can improve on that?
You've got somebody who's separate that can say, okay, what do we need to do? You need to be seen. You need to be heard. How can we do it? And that is the manager's job.
So you're basically kind of taking care of, you take care of the business side of things.
Yeah.
And then they can just get on with the business of, you know, being a good band.
Yeah, it's like the merchandise. We make more money on merchandise than anything else. We've got our own clothing company, own shoeing company, everything, which is what I put in place. I don't take a penny from that, but the lads get it.
Anyone can step up and go, oh, I'll manage your band. Mm. What do you think makes a good manager?
Yeah.
A good manager?
How would you be able to tell?
And the belief in the band that he's promoting. If you do not believe in the band, then there's nothing there.
If you're managing a band and you can get your band to do well, I mean, there must be a great sense of achievement from that as well. that you know that you have made a difference to or helped further their
ambition? Absolutely amazing. All the band live with me.
They don't have to move in with you, do they?
Yeah, they all live with me. I've also made sure that they've got things to fall down on if they need it. They've got to have something to fall back on because there's no money because everything's spent on equipment.
The question I'd like to ask next, John, is to do with, a sort of technical question to do with contracts.
Yeah.
What would you say is a good contract to sign and what would you say is a bad contract to sign?
What you need and need really badly is to get the Musicians Union on your side. They will give you free advice. They supply a solicitor and everything.
Okay.
Like I say, a band doesn't figure these things. The manager does. If you haven't got a manager, then he will not be looking at the dual side of the music industry.
Right. We've covered quite a lot of what you actually do, you know, for the band. Can there be a tendency of bands to, you know, underappreciate managers, do you think?
There's a lot of tendency with bands to do that, but I've been lucky.
Yeah.
The bands I've worked with, me, Adam in particular, is at my side all the while, and we make decisions together.
So it is important to keep them involved in that side of things.
Of course it is, yeah. Yeah, it's their life.
I'd just like to ask John also, would you say there is a difference between a manager to an unsigned band and a manager to a signed band?
Yes.
Is there a big difference, yeah?
Yeah, a signed band will be manipulated. An unsigned band will not be manipulated. They will be encouraged to get to the signed band stage.
As a manager, how would you deal with when you present your band with an idea and they don't like it, but you think it will be good for them?
Right, you respect what they're saying.
Sure.
And you go sit back and you stop and you listen.
Right.
So that frees them up when I say, okay, I've put the idea there. Basically, what are you going to do then?
I think we're nearly done there, John, but there's just one question I'd like to ask. If there's someone listening to this podcast who really wants to be a manager, how would they go out? How would they go about it?
Well, you go out to gigs. Local gigs, young bands, unsigned bands, see them and pick out the ones that have got talent, that you believe have got talent, that you can work for. And then you've got to say to these people, look, I will try and do this. And then make it work. The manager has to make it work.
Just quickly, because obviously this is the Sound Advice podcast, just a little bit of propaganda for ourselves. So how has Sound Advice helped Ictus?
They have made them part of a family.
Cool.
They have filmed them. They've done a bit of stuff about Leicester music industry. They've really helped put Ictus on the map. And basically the nicest people in the world. You only meet so many people like that. Basically, if you've got people like Sound Advice behind anybody, it's an absolutely amazing thing. It's just something you cannot dream of.
Well, thank you very much, John Murray. That's been an absolute...
John Murray, manager extraordinaire of the Future Stars.
Absolutely. Great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Okay, thank you.
That was John Murray there, talking about management, why band managers are important, and why you might need one. You're a musician, a proper one, what does gigs and that.
Yeah.
You got a manager?
I don't, but, you know, interesting.
Why not?
But, well, I've always done it myself.
Surely this has opened your eyes now.
It has.
The error of your ways is...
Yeah, what's interesting about that interview, you can get gigs as a musician, you can get plenty, but I think when you listen to John, you realise, you know, you can only get gigs to a relative standard. A manager's going to get you the really great gigs. You know, they're going to get you the tours as well. It's really hard to do a tour if you're just a musician by yourself without a manager. I know that. Personally, so I think, you know, that really is testament to the fact that having a manager, if you're a musician, is important.
Cool. Well, you've also actually worked with our next guest. This is an excerpt from that, from a video that we shot, which you can get in full on the Sound Advice website, soundadviceuk.com.
And that person is coming up now, and that is the wonderful Fran Landesman, beat poet, who started writing, I think, in about 1955, somewhere around that time. Anyway, she's going to be coming up next.
Hope we're going to have a good time, but I believe in defensive pessimism, so I'm going to start with, it's not your night. We all have had nights like that. You get dressed, hot to trot, check the mirror, terrific. You give yourself a thrill. But after that, it's all downhill. When you looked in the mirror, you were looking good, and you started the evening in a dandy mood. Now you're feeling rejected and misunderstood. It's not your night. As you sipped your martini, all your moves were great, but your gams made no impression on your date. Now you're toy with the pasta bleeding on your plate. It's not your night. Seems like the harder you try, the more the scene gets you down. It's just another night out, another night on the town.
That was brilliant, thank you very much. Well, if we start with talking about your lyrics, because obviously you've kind of done that introduction, and you've written lyrics for an amazing range of people. How did you get to work with so many different people?
But, you know, people keep saying, well, she wrote lyrics for Miles Davis. Actually, I never wrote lyrics for anybody. I wrote these songs, and people would come to me and say, we'd like to record, blah, blah, blah. And I'd say, great. Every time I think that a number would be good for someone, that's not what they want to do. When Miles, you know, he hardly ever had lyrics on his albums. They were all instrumentals. And two or three times he put a song on, and one of them was mine. And that I consider that a great honor.
Yeah.
And then he said to somebody, I don't want to tell her that I recorded a song because I don't want to give her the satisfaction.
But he did give you a lot of satisfaction. So where did they find your lyrics? Where did they see them?
Well, they were out. I'll tell you, it all started. We had this bar. I had to tell you, we had Barbra Streisand. We had, well, I told you the top of the crop, which was Lenny Bruce. He came twice, and the last time he got busted, and not only did he go to jail, but the guy who owned the bar he was playing in went to jail. We were afraid that if we booked him in again, that we'd wind up in this alongside him in a slam. But we took a lot of LSD. I want to say that was, of all the drugs that ever existed, that was the wonderful one. You know, Bob Dylan told this story on his, he became a disc jockey, and this spring, he did Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most on his show, and he talked about How I Came to Write It. And how I came to write it was I was hanging out with these musicians and listening to the way they talked. It was a different language. And I was thinking about April is the Cruelest Month, Mixing Memory with Desire by the greatest poet of them all. I was thinking of those words, and I thought the way the jazz musician would say April is the cruelest month would be spring can really hang you up the most. One jazz musician said, how could you ruin that beautiful music of Tommy's with that horrible lyric of yours? And I said, if it had not been for my horrible lyric, you would never have heard that beautiful tune.
Can you just tell us why you came to London and why that happened? Why had you not performed in St. Louis?
That is so interesting, because we came to London theoretically maybe for a year, and I was crossing the days off on the calendar and thinking, oh, I wish I could go back to New York. But when we came to London, we met Peter Cook and Dudley Moore and all those people. And one day I was walking down the street and I was thinking, why do I want to go back to New York? What could be better than this? I've lived in London longer than I've lived anywhere else, and I really still love it. I mean, London is not as good as it was, but neither am I, and neither is the planet Earth.
Why did you only perform when you came to London?
Because nobody ever asked me to. Now, that's not true. People did ask me to, but my husband, Jay Landisman, always discouraged me. My mother said one of the first things I ever said when I was a little kid was, Mommy, when am I going to get my freedom? And she didn't think that I even understood what it meant, but I did. And I didn't really want to get married. When Jay proposed marriage, I said, don't be stupid, I'll move in with you. Who wants to get married? Why should we do that? And he said, you'll be sorry. I would have made you a great husband. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to lose him. So I thought, well, I'll marry him, and if it doesn't work out, we'll get divorced. I said, I married you for better or for worse, but not for lunch. I didn't want to have to be responsible for making us.
But you guys had an open relationship. Well, you still do have an open relationship.
Yes. Frankly, if you want your freedom, then you've got to be prepared for the other person to have to be free, too. I don't want to tie anybody down. I don't want to climb into a cage with somebody. I got a lot of great ideas from Jay. And we was watching a dancer on television, and he said, that should have been me up there. I wasted my whole life messing up yours. And I also made a song out of that. All my songs come from either lines of poetry that I've read in books or things that people say. I nick a bit of something from everybody.
Do you enjoy seeing, like, all the different people performing your lyrics?
I love it. I keep saying the sexiest sound in the world to me are my words in somebody else's mouth.
What was it like being in that world?
It was lovely. You know, in a way, though, I took it all for granted then. I mean, everybody I knew was famous. But I didn't go after people because they were stars. They were the people that we knew and that we had something in common with.
I mean, because you've got two sons, Miles and Cosmo. What was it like kind of bringing them up in this world of musicians and famous people? And
well, you know, it's funny. We all got along brilliantly, and Cosmo was really crazy about me, and we'd take them to parties with us, and people would come to the door and say, did you bring Cosmo and Miles? Well, I mean, we live in the same house and all that. Anyway, I love them all being here, and I'm very proud of them.
Yeah. When was the time that you wrote your best lyric? Like, what were you doing?
All the time in those days, on buses, on trains, walking down the street. I'd sit down on a bench and write it out in the park, all over the place.
So what kind of stuff do you do now? I mean, I know you still perform, but...
That's about as good as it gets now. I love the writing this stuff and creating it was better, but it's so hard for me to do it because I can't see what I'm doing. I'll do one more poem. It's about me having a conversation with God. And I said, why are you so good to me, God? I'm selfish and self-centered and sometimes unkind. And God scratched his nose and said, you know, you're right. And he took away my sight. But I shouldn't complain.
No,
I do complain a lot. but I know I'm lucky.
When you look back, do you look back and you see a happy time? Or
I can't believe it. I think, keep thinking, did I make this up?
Yeah.
I was incredibly lucky. The one person that I always came to London dreaming of meeting was Noel Coward. And he died. And I used to say to Jay, do you think he ever heard any of my... Yes, dear, I'm sure he heard your songs. Jay, do you think he liked my song? Oh, sure, dear. And I was telling this pathetic story to Ned Sharon. And he said, well, it may interest you to know that I sat next to Noel Coward in a review where somebody performed a song of yours, and I went backstage with him afterwards, and I heard him congratulate the singer on the song. So he heard it and he liked it. The last time I drove a car, I almost drove it to the side of the truck, and Jay said, honey, I think it would be a lot cheaper if you took taxis. I have always led a low-tech life. I have to struggle with a fork and knife. Never learned to type or drive a car, can't use a computer, but I can find my way to the bar. I've never really bonded with any machine. Can't seem to get a grip on a simple routine. The only thing I ever learned was how to darn a sock and write some jazzy lyrics and suck a cock. Every word I call is true.
That was Fran Landesman. You can see that the video for that in its entirety on the Soundvice website, soundviceuk.com. Also, we've got a forum there as well where you can talk about pretty much anything you've seen on the website or anything you want to discuss with your other members and that.
Or what you've heard about in this podcast.
Well, definitely, yeah. Also, like I said before, we need rhyming couplets for a supercilious secret project. So please get those in as well. Also going to be setting up an email, which will be podcast@soundadviceuk.com. So it's just really important, you know, that we get your ideas in as well, because otherwise, I mean, this, you can pretty much tell we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah,
so
we've kind of winged this first one.
Any input would be greatly,
it has to be
greatly
said.
Appreciated, probably not credited, but still, I mean, please. Well, next month's podcast is going to be a special one-off on the upcoming Sound Advice live event at the Vortex Jazz Bar in Dalston. It'll be on the August of the 5th, as you do, why not? But that will be mainly featuring you. You'll be headlining it.
Yes.
With your band.
The Simon Lawrence Band.
The Simon Lawrence Band. No ego in that.
No.
At all. That's just laziness on your part.
To be fair,
part,
it wasn't actually my idea. It was Miles's idea, the guitarist.
Fair enough. But you'll be launching your new album.
We will be, yeah, Streets and Bars.
Which we'll be discussing in depth as part of this one-off Soundvice special. We'll also be talking to all the... behind the scenes people at Vortex, sound engineers, you know, all the unsung heroes, the forgotten ones, and also it'll be featuring Junkstar and
great
a mystery special guest,
who are going to be the first band of the night, but we don't know who they are yet, so tune in and find out.
Yes, definitely. More information you can get on did a Yoda sentence there. More information. Sound Official K website.
That sounded like Miss Piggy. So thank you very much for listening. Tune in next time. Anything you want to add there, Elliot?
I think you've covered everything there.
Yeah, that's
we've said it all.
We have.
And more.